Good evening and welcome to this, the second MG EVs community podcast of 2024, streaming live on Monday, the 29th of April. We're here to discuss MG EVs, hoping to inform and entertain you for about an hour or so tonight. You'll notice for the lack of Scottish tones that Dave Stewart can't make it tonight. I'm Tom Sedge, I'm T Sedge on the forum. I'll be your host for tonight, and I live in Devon and currently drive the 2022 model year MG4 long range trophy that you see behind me. Now, joining us this week are, from Wigan in England, Les Burrows. Hiya, Les.
Hi, Tom. Hi, everybody. I'm Les Burrows, same name on the forum, driving the MG5 long range trophy, and my wife drives the MG4 SE.
Fantastic. Good to see you again, Les.
Yep.
Returning from Swindon is Vince Williams. Welcome, Vince.
Hi, everybody. My name is Vince Williams, Vince31 on the forum. Currently driving the black ZSC V Mark II long range. Had that for a couple of years now. Used to have the old Mark I, so plenty of experience with that over 2 years. Still got the MGB as well. So, yeah, any questions? Fire them off.
Great, good to see you joining us again, Vince. And now making his debut tonight from South London is Leo Mindell. Welcome, Leo.
Hi, Tom. Hi, everybody. My name is Leo Mindell, same name on the forum. I currently drive a 5 long range, and I have just ordered, and I'm going to pronounce it wrong, I'll be the first one to pronounce it wrong tonight, a Cyberster.
Fantastic. We're looking forward to talking about that. And last but not least tonight, of course, as usual, from Chorley Group MG, we have the Innovation Development Manager, Miles Roberts. Welcome, Miles.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, Miles Roberts, CG, on the forum. Not currently driving an MG at all. I've just taken delivery of a Hyundai Ioniq 5, actually, which is going to be my company car for a little next little bit. But I am driving the MG3 Hybrid tomorrow, doing a video on that. And, I drive all of those all the time, so...
Right. Well, we're looking forward to digging into more on that. So if you're watching live, thank you for joining us. And please click the like button and join in on the discussion in the chat window. And if you're watching later, thank you for choosing to watch this video. And please subscribe to get a notification when we go live next time. So in tonight's podcast, we're discussing the new MG3 Hybrid, the MG Cyberster Configurator and Launch, and hot topics from the forum with the MG4, the MG5, and the MGZS-EV. And of course, any questions that you bring up in the chat. Many thanks to our premium members, Sloucher, MGBGT2ZS, Very Fat Bloke, EV Cog, Whiskery, Lager Baloo, and Big Bear. And if you like what we do at the MGEVs, please support us by becoming a premium member. So tonight, into our first topic, we're going to talk about new MG EVs. It's always an exciting time. And first one up is an update on the MG3 Hybrid, which we've talked about last time. So Miles, can you give us all the latest news? What have we learned recently about the Hybrid?
So the MG3 Hybrid Plus, to give it its full name, is an entirely new vehicle that's been designed and developed by MG. To suit the European car buyers. In China, they don't tend to buy small little city cars, hatchbacks. They tend to buy bigger cars. And so the MG3 is actually effectively just for the European market. They don't see it as being like a domestic seller at all. And so that means that it's been, the idea is that it's been designed to meet the current requirements that we have here in the UK and Europe, both on emissions to try and make it, obviously it's a most efficient petrol car that it can be, but also in terms of drivability, suspension, tuning, and things like that have all been done to a more European taste. The MG3 Hybrid Plus, to give people a bit of an idea, is about the size of a Fiesta. So it's a little bit bigger than the previous model. And it's got a completely brand new 1.5-litre petrol engine, which is an Atkinson cycle engine, if anyone knows anything about engines.
Wow.
Normal engines are Otto cycle. This is an Atkinson cycle, which means it's more efficient, leaner burn. And that has got about 100 brake horsepower in itself. And then it's got electric motor, which has got a maximum of, again, about 100 horsepower. 100 kilowatts, that is, so it's about 120 horsepower. Together, combined, they can both max out a total of 192 brake horsepower. So it's quite a difference from
the old. I've had one of the old MG3s as a courtesy car, and the one thing it's not is quick.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that, I mean, the old MG3, it was a very old car. It was on the market for 12 years, I think it was. Mm-hmm. So it was, it had been out in the same guise pretty much for a long, long time. And it served a purpose. It was a very affordable, very, you know, cheap to insure, cheap running costs, you know, relatively speaking. You could pick, these are cars that, you know, you'd be able to pick up for a sort of $8,500, you know. So it was a cheap car. Obviously, price increased over the last 12 years, but still, it was, you know, it was a very competitive, one of the cheapest city cars you could get still. But times move on, and, you know, I say, obviously, the emissions on the old 1.5 Otto engine was quite high, and that meant that taxation was quite high, and, you know, benefit in kind and all those sort of things, if they want to be used as, you know, company cars, was too high. And so they've got this hybrid plus system, and it's called hybrid plus because the lithium-ion battery that they use in there is much larger than you get typically in something like, say, a Renault Clio hybrid or a Toyota Yaris hybrid. So Toyota Yaris hybrid has got like a 0.65 kilowatt hour nickel metal hydride battery. Whereas the it's an NCM battery, nickel cobalt manganese battery they use in the hybrid plus MG3. And that's got 1.83 kilowatt hours, which is still small compared to an EV.
Mm.
Realistically, you know, if you think 4 miles per kilowatt hour for a small vehicle means that realistically this car can drive, you know, 4 or 5 miles in total on EV. Now, it won't do that all the time. It'll keep switching between EV, and it can work as a series hybrid, which is a bit like the Honda system that they used to use, the IMA. It can work as a parallel hybrid, so same as a Toyota. It can work as EV only. It can work as charge-based system, so the engine can work and drive the car and also charge the battery at the same time. So there's a few different drive modes it can do.
So can you explain that serial parallel? People may not be familiar with all the different types.
So a series hybrid is where the engine drives in series with the motor, so through the motor to give power to the wheel. So effectively the motor is supplementing the engine. Honda used this on their IMA system. So on the Civic and the Insight, they use a system called IMA, which is integrated motor assist. And effectively on the Hondas, it was quite a small system that it allowed them to use like a 1.3 litre, very small engine to move a fairly biggish vehicle with enough power to actually drive it before all the turbochargers and things that we'd use nowadays to get those sort of small crusty engines to work faster. And then a parallel hybrid is where it works both the engine and the electric motor together to both power the car through the, you know, through the wheels. So you can use both power sources together. So it can, this can decide whether it's EV only or petrol only or a mixture.
I see. Yeah. Why the? Sorry, go on.
No, go on.
I was going to say why is it such a bigger battery than normal? What's the advantage?
So the bigger battery is obviously it can store more power. So in under regenerative braking, it can do a lot stronger regenerative braking. In fact, it's got different braking modes in the MG3, similar to how you have in the EVs. So you've got 1, 2 levels. And there's a sort of e-pedally type mode as well. So, you know, it's really quite strong regenerative braking. So that's one benefit. The other is that the bigger battery is able to discharge more power, so it has a more powerful motor. So whereas your Yaris hybrid, for example, has only got quite a low power, sort of 60 horsepower electric motor. This one is like 120 horsepower, so it's a lot more powerful, but that obviously means it needs a bigger battery to be able to deliver that power successfully.
Right, yeah.
So, so it's a higher energy density as an NCM battery. So that's going to give, that's going to, you know, help with that, effectively having more capacity in a similar size externally battery, you know, shape. And the interesting thing is it runs through a three-speed gearbox, an auto gearbox.
Right.
Now,
Is that a, you mean a conventional automatic? Or
conventional automatic. Yeah, it's conventional automatic gearbox. So rather than some hybrids use a CVT like the Toyotas, some use a robotized manual like the Hyundai Omic kind of robotized manual. This uses a three-speed auto, and when you see on the spec sheet three-speed auto, you know, your mind instantly goes back probably to sort of like 60s and 70s Fords with, you know, Ford Granadas with a three or four speed box that was shifting like tectonic drift, you know. It was just the thing about the way that this works, obviously, because it has the electric motor as well, it actually just means that you don't notice the ratio changes. So the engine will accelerate, the motor will fill in the gap between as it changes gear.
It's blended. Oh, fantastic.
It drives really, really well. I was really impressed.
Sounds like a complete ground up total.
Total new car. So there's not a single bit of it.
Nothing like the old MG3.
Not a single panel or anything shared with the MG3 of old. So the good news is it drives well, it's a good car. And I say it starts at 18,995 and the top spec's 20,995. Well, you sort of, you know, to get an entry level Yaris, you're looking at Yaris Hybrid, looking at 23 grand. So yeah. Is undercutting the competition by sort of, you know, £5,000 or more, whilst offering perhaps a better package. Certainly compared to the Yaris that I drove back to back with it, I thought it drove an awful lot better. So it's good that MG have got this. I mean, it would be nice if they had an EV version of it. In terms of the dashboard and everything else, it looks basically like the MG4. So it's got the same two screens set up and. You know, the same drive mode selector. It's a rotary, you know, electronic selector rather than, you know, a traditional gear lever type thing that you'd have on an automatic. It feels modern inside. There's a couple of things I'd do differently. The back seat of it is still a small car, so you know, the back seat. When I was driving, the guys I was sharing the car with, both of those were sort of 6'4" and about 18 stone, and so when I sat in the back seat. I still had circulation to my feet, but I wouldn't have been comfortable for 100 miles like that, I don't think.
No.
So it's still a small
It's a small car. But Ian Anderson on the chat is saying that the review that he saw said that it felt like a CVT because of the motor able to fill in between the gear changes. So that seamless power, I guess, is what he's saying.
So it doesn't... I wouldn't... For me, the CVT... The problem you have with CVT on the Toyotas is that you put your foot down, a lot of noise happens, and then eventually you accelerate. Yeah. I think with this, it's 0-68 seconds, so it's a sporty little car, really.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that does then mean that, it's no longer capable of coming under low insurance groups. I think it's group 24 and 26 for this, which means that, I've crossed it off my son's next car list.
I was going to ask you on that. Miles, where do you see this car sitting for families? Is this going to be the small runaround, the second runaround? Is it going to be the car that you're going to see kids are going to be taking, I don't know, you know, the car that ends up going backwards and forwards to universities on those weekends? What do you see it?
I think it's got a potential basically to replace the Fiesta, because the Ford Fiesta's left the market now. They couldn't continue to make the Ford Fiesta because of emissions targets, and effectively the way that it works on the emissions targets from EC is that you almost get penalized for having a small car. So the smaller the car, you get a bit of a giveaway. If you have a large car which produces a lot of emissions, they kind of give you a knockoff based on the fact it's a heavy car. If you have a small car, it's never going to be proportionally that much lighter, that much smaller, that it's actually going to knock off the emissions equivalent, because you've got to obviously have a base of which you've got a safety cell and everything else that's going to weigh a certain amount. So the I think it's got a chance to, I mean, there's 25,000 Yaris hybrid sold last year. I think it's got a chance to steal some of those. Before the Fiesta died, that was selling sort of 50 to 100,000 cars a year.
Especially if it's a sporty drive, because the Yaris is not that, not in the basic form anyway.
So I think that it does have an opportunity to take some of those sales. I think, you know, the PCP offers that's come out, I think it's about 229 a month, or 249 for the spec. So
I think it'll sell well. I do, considering the Fiesta's gone. They need something to replace the Fiesta, and there's nothing actually popped up until this. And the hybrid like them a lump, but I mean, at the end of the day, they're always going to be here. You're always going to need them. Somebody's going to have an hybrid somewhere along the line, because not everybody can charge this open. Not everybody's got the facilities to charge it up.
I can see that. I can see this also doing incredibly well in the markets like South Africa and India. Where they've gone nowhere yet in that market at all, and because they just don't have the infrastructure, but they have the will and the want. And this sounds exactly the sort of thing you can see on the streets of Mumbai.
They're targeting 10,000 sales for the UK this year.
Great.
But they haven't got a cap on volume. So basically, in the event that we start selling loads and loads and loads of them, they can build more. One of the unique things that MG's got going for it is that almost every other car manufacturer, Toyota included, is struggling to hit this 22% challenge that they've got to sell 22%. If they don't get to 22%, then they get fined £15,000 per car over, which again doesn't benefit you from selling a cheap car. You haven't got the margin in it to sort of take it out. So last year, MG, 40% of its mix were EV. So it can actually be one of the few brands who can introduce a new non-EV and advertise and promote it.
Got that to spare, haven't they? Yeah.
We can do this, You know, you've seen, we spoke last time, I think, about Honda offering the ENY1 out for like £16,000 discount because they had to shift some EVs because they had basically sold none. And then they sold 250 in a weekend because of this crazy PC. You won't see Honda advertising the Jazz or the Civic or whatever else, you know, actively on TV, spending money on marketing campaigns, because they can't actually afford to sell any more of those until they sell loads of EVs. So
if MG are using their own credits, that's better for you anyway, isn't it? You know, rather than selling your credits to other ICE vehicle manufacturers, you're using up your own allowance, aren't you? Rather than having a
Totally, yeah. And I think also, obviously, MG has got a bigger EV mix in terms of models. You know, we've obviously got the 4, the 5, the ZS. We're going to have the Cyberster as well. Yeah. So, you know, in terms of new car sales, we've got quite a lot of EVs anyway. And I think realistically, the petrol cars we're going to have are going to be the petrol ZS, the hybrid MG3, and the FEV HS. But the FEV HS is also getting an update this summer as well, so with a bigger battery.
Great. Well, we look forward with anticipation. So when do we expect it to launch? Any news on that?
So the MG3 hybrid, actually, we got our demo last Friday. So a lot of dealerships are receiving their demonstrators already. I'm taking ours out tomorrow and I'm going to do a video. So hopefully by the end of this week, if you look for Chorley Group MG3, you should find a video from me reviewing it and driving it around. I'll take it around the Trough of Boland, I think, around the sort of Ribble Valley, and see how it gets on.
Yeah,
fantastic. Great. All right, let's move on to the hotly anticipated Cyberster, particularly by Leo, because I think you have one on order, is that right?
I put down a deposit for it, I'm going to say at least 6 months ago, with my dealer, this sort of pre-order, and then finally went in on Friday and did all the bits of the configuration. Was it Friday or was it Sunday? I can't remember. It was over the weekend to do the configurator and place the order.
What colour have you gone for, Leo? What colour have you gone for?
I'll show you, actually. I can just flip up. So this is the configurator that everybody's probably seen. And I actually chose the dual. And then when it came to the colour, I went for the Camden Grey. On the interior, I went for the red and black.
Nice.
I looked at this and I thought, that will stay on your driveway as long as a Range Rover will. So that was my worry on that. And I just think I don't want to be driving in that. So I went for the Camden Grey. My partner and I thought that's the one that we like. In respect to the engine, there's, and I'll leave Miles to explain all the differences. When it came down to the choices between the single and the dual, I mean, the difference you're paying when you're paying anyway, it's like, if you're going to, it just felt like it made no sense to go for the single. And then the interior, it's funny, actually, the interior on the website calls it gray or black and red, but I think on something when I was in the dealership, they said white for the gray one. And just the thought of pouring a coffee over white seats just doesn't seem to be...
It's a light gray, yeah.
Yeah, it's a light gray. So I went for the red, which... there's a really interesting video that I watched showing the cars that was done from Top Gear did their video this week or last week. Really, really good video. But it had the full red interior, which I think you've talked about before, Miles, didn't come to here, thankfully, because it was just too much red. Too much red. But that's what I've ended up with. So...
Very nice.
Great, fantastic.
It looks very nice.
Very, very, very jealous of you. So, Miles, take us through what's available. What have MG chosen to bring to the UK? Which configurations? What price points? What do we need to know?
Great. Well, I mean, Leo, nice choice. I think it's got that sort of fancy London suit look to it, because it's sort of, you know, the Camden grey with the red and black interior. It's like when you flash the lining inside an Oswald Worthing.
Yeah. It very much looks like, I'm going to say it has a look of like a 911. I'm not going to say it is a 911, but it has that color of the 911.
Yeah, I think it's a nice choice. I think it's a nice, I've seen video of one in that color with that combination, and it did look very nice with the top down. So yeah, good choice. So there are, as we've already said, there's two specifications in terms of which motors you go, whether you go for the Trophy or the GT. So in normal other MGs, the Trophy is the top spec, and then you know, you've got SE or whatever below that. So these just come with the two options. So we've got Trophy, so indicating it's already a highly specified car, or GT. And the only difference between the two is that with the GT, you get a front-mounted electric motor in addition to the rear one. Power goes up to about 570 horsepower, I think it is. 0 to 60 drops from 5.7 seconds down to 3.2. And your range takes a bit of a hit. It goes down to about sort of 275, I think they're claiming for the GT line. But even if you go for the Trophy, you've got, you know, the same brilliant doors, you've got the same power roof, you've got the same Bose sound system. The only other difference as well with the GT, as I've just seen flicked on the photo, was they've got 19-inch wheels on the Trophy, and you get 20-inch wheels on the GT.
I went through every single page lining the two up next to each other going what, and literally ticking them off as you would do, as you can imagine. And you're absolutely right. Wheels, top speed, and unfortunately, and everybody talks about range anxiety, the range goes down. That's the one negative of the GT.
Yeah, it's, I mean, to be fair, it's, I get where you're coming from. I think, you know, when you're paying 55 grand for a car, you might as well pay 60 and get the one with all the power. Interesting, actually. I'm just looking at the breakdown of orders we've had so far. So far, we've had 26 orders in at our dealership, of which 16 are for the GT and 10 are for the Trophy. Which I actually was surprised. I thought more people would go GT, but we've got New English White. Oh, let's talk about the colours. So there's five colours available. There's New English White, which is sort of cream. We've got the Camden Grey, which is obviously the one that Leo's chosen. We've got Cosmic Silver, which is a more brighter silver.
I think my five is in Cosmic Grey. That's cosmic silver. I think my five is in silver. They're the same colours that the fours and the fives are in. Am I right on that, Miles?
So the Camden Grey is the same. The cosmic silver that you've got is on your five is actually not cosmic silver. I think
it's Westminster silver, isn't it? Westminster silver, Miles?
I'm in a pre-facelift. Is that right, Les?
Yeah, Westminster silver in the pre-facelift, yeah.
Okay.
And then we've got the dynamic red, which is the same on all of the MGs. And then we've got the Inca yellow, which is their special yellow paint. But one of the things about MG is that the paint cost is exactly the same on Cyberster as what it is on the MG4. So it's $5.45 if you choose the metallics, as in the greys or the silver, gray or silver. And the red and the yellow are both premium paints at $6.95.
Sorry.
Go on, Leo.
I was going to say on the roof, and maybe if I put the roof the other way around, the roof of the red to the black roof, and I think the red roof can only come on the greys and the silver. You can't choose the red roof on the greys and the silver. You can't choose the red roof on the red or the yellow.
Right. You can have it on the New English white. And actually, I think that the red roof on the New English white looks quite nice. I think that probably suits it best, the red roof. It's £500 option for the red roof. We've only had one ordered with the red hood at the moment.
I just think I would get I think I'd get it slashed in about 5 minutes in London with a red roof.
Yeah, it does depend where you are, doesn't it?
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's a Camden grey with a red interior and red roof, so we'll just sort of see what as a GT, so we'll see what you could have won, Leo, if you'd ordered the red roof.
Yeah, I mean, the question in my head, Miles, when you talk about colours, is there's a missing one. Where is it? Where's the green? Where's the racing green?
I said this from the off, Leo.
Where? Well, I mean, heritage
British
here.
British racing green should be on this one.
Colours. There's plans to introduce more colours in the future, but...
Yeah, and we've had the matte green on the X-Power. Yeah.
But is the matte green isn't the racing green.
It's not British racing green, Tom.
No.
I said this about the Sabs when it was first announced. I said, I hope they do it in green.
I assume there is, Mars, there's going to be a limited editions coming out, and one of those will be British racing green with a hard top and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
There may well be in the future. Yeah, I've seen a hard top development in China, actually. So, I wouldn't be surprised if that's off an accessory or something. Point. Having said that, the soft top that's provided is really, really nice. When I sat inside the car, it's double insulated. It feels really nice. Actually, does the roof so? It's not like
strong. It's very strong.
Not like the MGF ones.
Fantastic.
So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4 have been ordered so far in New English White. 4 in the Cosmic Silver. 5 in the Camden Grey. 9 of them have been ordered in Dynamic Red.
I would have the red.
The red's the most popular colour.
The 10-year-old boy in me would insist on the red.
Yeah, I've had a red car before, and I know paintwork changes, I know whatever, but it fades. It fades in the sun. Oh. Is my worry with a red car.
Well, so our experience, had the trophy red out, the dynamic red out for a while now, and a lot of it's. Because it first sort of came out in terms of EVs with the MG ZS EV.
ZS.
But it was available on a petrol car prior to that, sort of since 2017. We've not seen any fading at all in the red, which is good. You know, after sort of 7-8 years, it's now been out in.
Think it's not like the old Vauxhalls and the old Ford. They've got different paint finishes these days, different pigments.
It's a tri-coat paint, so it's a metallic rather than like your old Royal Mail van, a bit pink. All I can say is, look, there's in terms of orders, MG have basically said there's an allocation for this year that's about 1,500 cars, and if you think across all of the dealers, that basically means that Chorley Group should be able to sell 30. Well, we're currently on 36 this morning.
So get yours.
So I was going to ask you two. I was going to ask you on that. In comparison to other car launches for you, how is that? Is that a good figure, bad figure? Is it where you expected it to be?
I can compare something like the Clio EV9 that's launched recently. Obviously, another premium priced, you know, £65,000 SUV electric.
Yep.
Mile range. I think we've sold three.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that we've got 26 in a weekend, I'd say was pretty good going.
Sounds good.
So I think that, yeah, it's in terms of, you know, the demands there. I mean, it's pent up demand because we've known about this car for bloody ages. You know, like you said, Leo, you put down your deposit 6 months ago. I've had people wanting to put down like 2 years, you know, so.
Yeah, I've been ringing and ringing and ringing every other couple of weeks to my dealer just to say when.
So when are people going to get the cars, Miles? When do you think they're going to?
Dealers should receive their demonstrators in July. Mm-hmm. The first customer cars will arrive July, August.
Yeah.
And then therefore, now it's, the problem is obviously we've got, like I said, we've got a very broad mix at the moment of what has been ordered. Now, I don't know how that looks with other dealers. I don't know if every other dealer's got a mix like that, because I know that when the dealers had to pick their demonstrator and showroom vehicles, we were given the choices, and 90% of them ordered were red GTs. No, sorry, 50% were red GTs, and the other 50% were yellow GTs. Mm-hmm. Nobody ordered an intro at all for the showroom or for the demonstrator, because might as well get a big one, I suppose. But that didn't really help MG at all in planning what they were going to bring across, because nobody ordered.
There was no guide.
Trophies, for example, or New English whites with red roofs.
Hmm.
So
I think it says somewhere there's a total of, I think it's 32 configurations or something like that, I read somewhere. Which, in comparison to some cars in the past, is like, you know, you had 32 different variations on steering wheels on some cars, it feels like. Yeah, so they've kept it quite tight.
On the MG, variation you've got is FD or Trophy, and then you've got, you know, the battery sizes, so it's and a few colours. Yeah. So I think in terms of configuration, it is a bit more bespoke than its other offers. I think that probably within the next week or two, they're going to be sold out this year based on the current run rates.
Right.
So if anybody
tried to insure one yet?
That's a good question.
I mean, that's a good question. I asked what rate, what do you think, Miles, where's it going to sit?
I'm not surprised if it's going to be hitting sort of like group 45 to 50. I had an iPace, which was group 48. So, and that was 400 brake horsepower. So I think that, a, you know, 500 and whatever horsepower GT is probably going to be there or thereabouts, possibly slightly higher. I don't think it's going to be 50, but I think it's probably going to be sort of 48 or 49.
Why, Miles, do you think they didn't bring the 64 kilowatt version, 64 kilowatt hour?
They'd have to remember the price, but it would have given less range. And everyone's always saying range. And again, it would have multiplied out the configuration options again.
Yeah.
So in terms of building stuff, everything, you might as well just build it all.
So it's the same thinking as the short range trophy, a standard range trophy not being offered as on the MG4. It's just one extra complicating configuration. Yeah.
I mean, also, one of the questions I had for you, Miles, is, you know, I can't see if it has a heat pump. And why? Because it's all about range. Heat pumps are all about range, especially in the climates that we're in. What do you know about that, Miles?
I mean, what I would say is that on an example of when I've seen Jonathan Porterfield, I don't know if you watch this stuff on YouTube, he did a comparison. Versus of one with the heat pump, one without. And the difference was about 5 miles over the full charge. So it was a very minimalistic difference. It wasn't 20% or anything like that, you know. It was like, let's say, 5 miles over the full charge. So I think that I don't know whether it has a heat pump or not, but given that it's got a soft top, I wouldn't really care either way. So I guess that most people are probably, you know, if it's
Yeah.
This is not going to be somebody's main commuting car, I wouldn't imagine. Leo, you may
well that, do differently. That's why I was wondering about the 64 kilowatt hour battery, because for me, if I that was the version I was interested in, being a bit lighter and a bit cheaper, and then thinking, well, I'm only going to use it as a weekend car, so I don't need, I mean, 200 miles would be plenty, but even less would probably be enough. But I appreciate that everyone's got a different use case, and if you're looking at it as your main vehicle, or you want to be able to go on a road trip, perhaps, Leah, then you want
that. Yeah, that was exactly. And I mean, unfortunately, I've been thrown by the date, but
I'm thinking about along the line that, you know, a lot of the cars we have here, the MG5 and the ZS for that matter, they don't come with it, the heat pump, but in Europe, they do.
Yeah.
If I'm not badly mistaken, I think apart from what was it, Wheels and Tech, it was his thing, what we used to have with us quite a few times in the past. He was one of the first ones to have the MG5, the facelifted MG5, the new one, like mine. Mm. And that had heat pumping in France, but it didn't have it here.
Yep.
Never came with it here. Same with the charging. In France, in Europe, it comes with an 11 kilowatt onboard charger, but in England, some very early ones had 11 kilowatts, but now basically the specification says 6 or 6.5, I think it is, 6.6, I think it is.
Yeah.
But one or two of them have got 11 kilowatts onboard charging. I've got 11 kilowatts on mine.
I guess, you know, in Europe, 22 kilowatt charging is quite popular.
Yeah.
So you get it more of a use, I guess. But I suppose it's all about cost, weight, you know, specification, and MG UK presumably said we don't need that here.
I don't know. Sweden.
I would agree.
Norway, but that very, very cold. They will need heat pump. There's no danger about
but
that.
This is the funny thing. This is where I think my brain starts saying, well, this car isn't a 5. It isn't a 4. It's in a different marketplace.
It's
I'm just looking, taking what you've just said there, Les, and looking. Yeah. It's got the onboard charger is 7 kilowatts. It doesn't have 22. It hasn't got a three-phase 22 kilowatt charger by what this says on the configurator.
It'd be interesting to see what they're doing in Europe with it. What they're doing in Europe with it, whether it does come with that. I don't know.
Yeah, it will be.
It's got 144 watt DC charge. That's a massive up for me for my five. But I don't know what your five has got.
But 88, what? I think. 80. I've seen the maximum I've seen on it is 88.
Yeah, they're supposed to max out at 90, I think, those lads.
Yeah, they said 144 here.
Yeah, that's pretty much the same as the X Power. The extended range, sorry. Yeah, it was the same battery. I guess the argument in the UK will be most people in the UK will either have 7 kilowatt home charger or they'll be using a DC fast charging route.
Yeah, and that's true.
I totally buy, if you're spending that much money, you would want a heat pump, you would want 22 kilowatt AC, all the bells, all the whistles.
Yeah, and I want over the air updates.
Would be nice.
Track days, all of the things that you sort of are starting to move into that. You know, it's going to be fascinating to see whether MG are going to go down this road.
Absolutely.
I mean, even the early Model 3 Teslas, when they came, they didn't have a heat pump when they first came. Mm. Obviously, the latest ones from about 21, 22 onwards, they came with a heat pump, but the early ones did not. I remember Barry, he's now got an MG3, and that has not got a heat pump. That's a standard heater. So, they're improving them all the time. Things are changing all the time. And the same with the MG, I suppose. But obviously, I'd be interested to see what they do with the European ones. Because if they're going to sell it in Europe, they've got, as we've just said, they've got plenty of 22 kilowatts charging about over there. And the climate is a lot colder in some of the Scandinavian countries than what it is here. And I think they'd need it over there. So it wouldn't make sense to me to make one without a heat pump and one with a heat pump. But I've got a feeling it'll come with it. I have got a feeling it'll come with it.
Well, let's see. Let's see. We'll find out soon. Leo won't have long to wait, but it's too late for your road trip. Is that right, Leo? You're planning.
Yeah,
road trip.
Yeah. So just as an aside, so I'm actually planning to this is my summer road trip. I'm taking the ferry across to Le Havre, and then I'm going to the Olympics in Paris, driving over to Milan, up into the mountains, and then I take a train. I put the car on the train from Innsbruck back to Dusseldorf because there's an overnight train, and then back to Calais, all in my five. That's the plan for the summer. And for those that have range anxiety, I've been using the Electroverse app to, and this is just one leg. This is the Paris out. So it shows that I'm where I'm going. I'm starting in Paris. It's really good. I really, really like it. I'm sure there's lots of other options out there, but I really like it that I put in where I'm starting, where I'm going to arrive, what the percentage is going to be. I don't know how much of that you can see, but it just basically tells me that I'm going to be doing 239 miles. I've got four stops and a total of 47 minutes charging, which I don't think is bad.
That's not
bad for where I'm planning to go. I mean, it's not, I've done London to Berlin in a day. You know, I've driven that 7,000 miles an hour, of which I saw absolutely nothing because everything's going past you at a billion miles an hour. So it is a different journey. It is a different journey. It is a different way of traveling, I think. But since I've been using this when I've been traveling around the UK, I found it to take that edge off because I can immediately put in what I've got at the moment, what I want to end up at. And I know if I have to stop or if I don't have to stop. So that has been really good for me.
Fantastic. Well, have a great time. We look forward to hearing about your exploits and how you get on.
Yeah, well, yeah, if you can arrange for me to do it in a, if the Cybster appears, Miles, strap a webcam on the top.
Disappear for a few days.
And I'll do it in the Cybster rather than doing it in the five. But yeah.
Okay. Well, that's an offer.
That's it. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, good luck with that.
Good luck with
So great. That's great news about the MG3 Hybrid Plus. I've got to remember to say the plus with the big battery and the Cybster. Don't forget, if you missed our last podcast in March, we also talked about the potential MG9, MGS9, and the definite IML6 that's coming to the UK in 2025. So you'll find out lots of details in there. We also mentioned in that podcast we're expecting the MG5 to be replaced by a possible MG4 Estate by the end of this year. And a new MGZS EV is due by the end of this year as well. Obviously, as we have more details, we'll talk about them. But Miles, any idea when we're going to learn more about any of those?
So the launch strategy that I know of so far is that the MG HS plug-in hybrid is getting overhauled in July. Mm-hmm. The MG4 Estate and the MGZS EV facelift. Well, the MGZS EV is going to get put onto the new common shared architecture platform that the MG4 and the MGZ Cybster share. So the ZS will get put onto that same platform. The MG4 Estate to replace the MG5, because again, it's going to go onto the new platform. The new version of the Marvel R is supposed to be coming, I think, early next year. And yeah, there's talk of the IML6 to be launched sort of late spring, early summer next year as well. So there's going to be quite a lot of cars in an MG showroom soon.
Quite a lot of electric.
Yeah, a lot of electric.
Yeah, and, fantastic.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be, we need bigger showrooms, basically. So that's one of the
issues. Your new site in Blackpool, is that, they were talking about it earlier, is that bigger?
Yes, so we've got a decent floor space in the Blackpool side of dealership. So Blackpool MG will be opening in June, hopefully. It's currently being decorated inside and out. It's sharing the site with our Citroen and another Stellantis brand, which are going to be moving in again from June when it's all opened up. It was originally a Citroen showroom with a big workshop. We've knocked through into the workshop and then built another workshop behind, so it's quite a big facility, sort of triple branded. And if you've ever been to Blackpool, then it's on Amy Johnson Way, which is near the airport. near the big Morrisons. But our Burnley dealerships, and that needs rebuilding because it's not big enough to take all these new cars.
Yeah. So, and on the chat, Ian Anderson is saying, you know, is this why we've been disclosing smaller dealership? Maybe you want to talk a little bit about the changes to the MG NV dealerships, what's been going on there? Because some people have seen their local dealer close.
So, I mean, basically, I mean, MG's gone to dealers and said, look, you know, we need to sell more cars, more range of cars. You need to be able to physically fit these in. So, if you aren't able to fit those in, you need to build a bigger showroom. If you can't build a bigger showroom, you need to find one. If you can't find one, we'll have to find one, and that might involve us not working together anymore. Which is rather cutthroat, but it's kind of the way business is. You know, they're wanting to expand their, you know, a lot of, when we joined MG in 2017, they were selling 12,000 cars a year, if that. And now this last year, they sold 90,000, I think it was. So, you know, the number of cars that they're selling year on year is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It's now in the top 10 manufacturers in terms of sales in the UK. And it needs bigger premises to, you know, to be, sort of reflect that and to be able to showcase their brand. With Cyberster, there's going to be these new Cyberster areas within the showroom, which are going to have, like, you know, acacia wood flooring and carpeting and, you know, wood-backed, you know, plinths and stuff and extra lights, and make it look as a special area in the showroom. And if you haven't,
so that's going to launch for Cyberster, Miles, but will they be putting other cars into that? Is then the natural thing that the same way as, you know, some...
The IML6 looks kind of Cyberster-y in terms of the amount of tech it's got and performance and price point. I can imagine a model like that, perhaps, and possibly the Marvel R, sort of falling within that section of the showroom. But yeah, I mean, effectively, you've gone from a time when we had the MG3, the HS, and the ZS, petrol, to, you know, so we had three cars in the lineup, to now going to a point where we've got MG3, MG4, MG5, ZS, HS, Cyberster, MG4 Estate. Yeah, so we're going to have, you know, sort of six or seven or eight brand, you know, cars in the showroom. Rather than three, and that just can't physically work with some sites.
Yeah,
you know, some of these guys that have been selling MGs, yes, they've been selling for a long time, but they've been selling them from really, really small premises, you know, almost like looking like little showroom you get next to a petrol station.
Yeah, sort of thing. But is there also a change, not just in the sale of the car, in the actual, especially with a lot of them going to electric cars that you're selling, the EV model needs less servicing, less that side of the dealership that used to be a big part of the dealership.
Yeah, I mean, thank God for software updates. But if it was, I mean, in terms of, you know, fixing electric cars, there's a lot less equipment needed. There's a lot less need for servicing equipment and so on. You know, so it's hard. I think it's hard for dealerships now. Not that I expect anyone to feel sorry for dealerships, but I think it's hard for dealerships to maintain profitability unless they are big showrooms that sell a lot of cars. And with us, we've multi-branded most of our sites, you know, so like the new MG dealership. So
you need an even bigger site then,
You know, it's going to have three different brands on site. And across the road, we've got Kia, Hyundai, Nissan, all on one side of the road. And then on the other side, we're going to have Citroen, Peugeot, and MG. So, you know, it's... that's the way that we maintain profitability, is by, you know, having multiple brands that we can do, you know, so we can keep our workshops busy, so that we can keep our salespeople busy as well. Because with the shift to a sort of blended way in which people buy cars now, where they do a lot of shopping, it's not, you know, you don't necessarily need the same number of sales staff, because people are not coming in for test drives on every single model they're making. They've decided that almost by the time they come to the dealership. You know, they come to the dealership, they do one test drive, and only if it goes horrifically, they're not buying that car. Most people have made their mind based on YouTube videos and websites.
That's true.
It is all changing as the brand grows and things develop. But I guess it is a shame if you were a small loyal dealer and you got through COVID. I mean, John Owens made that point on the chat. It's tough if you then were told you can't make it. But I guess times change and we have to change with them.
Can I just ask a quick, really quick related question, Miles? So life of cars in the past used to be, you buy a car from your dealer, you then would either PX it back to the dealer or not, or it would go into the second-hand market. Are you seeing, I'm just wondering if that's going to change. Are we going to be saying we're giving the cars back to the dealer and the dealer isn't even going to sell them back in the market? They're going to take them back and recycle them back to China or something, or take them abroad?
I think possibly in other markets. The problem we've got, obviously, is right and drive, and not many other places on earth are. As a percentage.
Apart from the whole developing market of India and Africa, yeah.
Well, yeah, not yet. They're not there yet, though, are they?
I think to be honest, there's probably more. What we have tended to do in the past in the UK, you know, with ICE cars, let's say, is that, you know, the parts might get parted out here and then sold overseas rather than sending the whole vehicle over. I think that with EVs, there's an opportunity for us to utilize the batteries as second life, as, you know, solar storage, or obviously to keep existing EVs on the road. I don't see somebody exporting a 150,000 mile Cyberster from UK to India, because I think that the cost of shipping and so on, you know, as a one-off type thing, would be, you know, prohibitive. And I think also that we're, you know, if we're thinking about, you know, 10, 15 years down the line, when that car is got 150,000 miles on it, what solid state batteries are going to be available and things like that, that would perhaps make it so that the costs of, maybe it might be better to convert your existing Cyberster and chuck a solid state battery in with 500 miles range. Maybe that might be the equivalent of, you know, when we used to take like an MG Midget and you'd put a different A series engine in it. You know, it would be something like that in a way, you know, that we can. So I think indeed we are in a flux time when, you know, car manufacturers are still trying to work out what they're doing with recycling and things. Nissan had a big plan to use old Nissan Leaf batteries in a device called X Storage, which was in the equivalent of Powerwall from Tesla, and they couldn't make it into a marketable product because they didn't have enough Nissan Leaf batteries to actually remanufacture it on the storage. So yeah, I think that we'll see where things go, but I think there are options. I don't know if shipping the cars wholesale, you know, as one big piece abroad is the answer.
Well, let's see. Stranger things have happened. Okay, let's move on to hot topics from the forums. People may have noticed there's been some recent forum improvements, thanks to Stuart and the team. So there's a new hybrid cars, MG hybrid cars area, where you'll find the MG3 Hybrid Plus forum. Also, don't forget we've got the free classified ads area if you were looking to buy and sell things. And also don't forget about our EV solar battery and electricity tariff discussion forum. For anyone interested there. Now, let's not start with the MG4, because I've always tried to do that, and it's not fair. So let's start with the MG5. Before I bring in Les to talk about one item, I noticed that James and Kate's YouTube channel had a recent 120,000-mile report on their 2021 MG5, where they had very few problems, because they do a high-mileage business use. It's a great channel to subscribe to, by the way. Little bit of damage on the driver's seat, a little bit of needing to grease or oil things, some minor rust spots, which I think they put down to a fault in the paint on their particular early car. But they say the tyres have been lasting 45 to 50,000 miles, and the battery state of health, which was particularly interesting, is still at 92%. And they made the point that you can now get an MG5, an early one, for less than £10,000 secondhand, and you've got a very long-lasting car. So one of the things we're learning is that these EVs really can last, and you know, the fears about batteries decaying are really well in the past. But I'd love to hear what you think, Les and Leo, with your MG5s.
Well, the MG5 for me is a great car. I mean, it's going on what you were saying there about James and Kate, you've also got to remember that he's working as a mobile mechanic, and he's doing a hell of a lot of rapid charging. When he's on the road, it's not all 7 kilowatt charging what he's doing. He's out day and night. He's staying out overnight in Scotland, staying out overnight all over the country. And he's got a rapid charge wherever he can. Yeah, On his video, you'll see he does sometimes get a little bit of slow charging, 7 kilowatts of his customers. You know, some of his customers say, yeah, plug it in, it's fine. But most of his stuff, he's done on rapids, and it's not really affected the battery much at all. From what you can see, 92, 93% still stays after 120,000 miles.
It's so a lot. Interesting. I'm mates with James, and I sold the car. He was talking about his car, and somebody on on a Facebook group said that they had a taxi, ZSE.
Yeah, yeah.
It's 187,000 miles, Mark 1 ZSEV. With all the bongs, it's not had the Comfort 2 update, so it's one of the original old ones with the different voltage and everything. And he's, I think it was 87% state of health it was showing, which, again, 180,000 miles. You know, this is a car which has been...
That's on the 44 kilowatt battery, I believe. Is that right, Mark?
Yeah. Been rapid charged a couple of times a day, every day.
Every day, yeah.
4 years. Yeah. And it's, you say, the battery's holding extremely well. You know, when we talk about the warranty of 100,000 miles in 8 years, we've got, you know, that's if it is for it to stay above 70% in those 8 years. 100,000 miles.
Yeah, and if that was a nice car, that would be three clutches, cam belts.
Yeah, a couple of exhausts
and everything else.
Yeah, everything else falling off it. Yeah, guaranteed.
All the fluids and changes. And
I mean, in London now, I go down to London occasionally. I mean, Leo, you live down that way, do you, in London?
Yeah.
I've noticed more and more and more MG5s flying around as taxis.
They're
more
everywhere.
And more and more. They're all over.
Oh, there was Ubers, loads of them, yeah.
Absolutely everywhere. Absolutely everywhere.
MG5s, they are, they're everywhere.
That's the problem I have when I occasionally pick people up, as in friends, and people try and jump in the car. It's like, I'm not your taxi.
They took over from the Toyota, is it Paris?
Prius. Yeah, Prius.
They took the second over from that because they was all over the place for a few years. Now it's the MG5, it's everywhere.
But so mine, touch wood, two years old. But the only thing I've had to change, which actually I would say is a good change, I changed the windscreen wipers recently because I park and there's some tree stuff, and every day I'm having to like reach around and pull the windscreen off, the wiper off, just because it's got bits stuck underneath it. I changed to a new set of wiper blades. It's stopped doing that. Okay, yeah. That was a big change. But there's nothing.
The only other thing we've got on the forum, on the forum at the moment, as you probably know, or you would have seen, I would think, there's a lot of chat about this Tesla update for the charging. And it's been going on now for some considerable months. And there's a lot of threads involved in that. And the thing with it is, there's a lot of people saying the update they've had done, and it's been done free by the dealer, and it's working. And a lot of people are saying that the dealer is saying to them, there is no updates available. It doesn't exist. It's not there. Well, we know it does exist because I've had mine done. And we know that it will work, and we know that it can work. But I believe that some of the dealers are saying that it either doesn't exist or it is an enhancement and it is chargeable. Now, I don't know if this is right, but can you clear this up, Mads?
Yeah, so for those dealers that don't claim to know about it at all, if MG dealers have a system called the Technical Repair and Information Portal, or TRIP, and if the mechanic goes on to TRIP and searches Tesla charger, it comes down with this sort of, you know, guide as to what to do. So it says, customer symptoms, I can't charge my car on Tesla chargers. DTC codes, none, because it won't cause an error code because it just doesn't work. It says, background, MG models have issues charging on Tesla DC chargers. However, methods have been taken to improve the compatibility of MG models with Tesla DC chargers. Only certain chargers will work with non-Tesla vehicles. Please make your customers aware of this. A location map of chargers which are open for use in non-Tesla models can be found on the Tesla app. Please note, this is an enhancement to the vehicle and is not covered by the vehicle warranty. Should the customer want the work carried out, they were liable for the cost of repair. And then there's a repair guide where they can click and see which updates they need. So originally, Les, we discussed this at length, and I managed to get MG to say that they were going to allow us to update your car with the Tesla thing. We could claim it back under warranty. And then it would appear that basically they got fed up of people claiming under warranty for the Tesla charge. So now saying that it's no longer covered by their warranty and that it's classed as an enhancement. And as such, you'd need to pay for your workshop time.
Bad news,
which I don't agree with, Les. And I've raised it with MG UK directors, but they've not come back to me as yet. I don't think that compatibility with a brand of charger is an enhancement. I think it's a...
No. It's basic functionality. Yeah.
But that's so when you're talking to your dealer and they're saying you've got to pay for the update, that's why, because they're not going to get paid for it otherwise. And it does take about an hour or so in the workshop. So it's an hour of a master tech's time. So it's unfortunately, because it's the master techs that do the updates, it's the most expensive guy. It's not the, you know, you can't give the work experience lab the laptop and say, update this. You need someone that has been on the training course and so on. So, you are paying the full labor rate. So it is going to cost that. If they should charge you, obviously, by that, if the update happens to go through and all the servers are working great and everything else, it might take them 20 minutes, in which case you only get billed 20 minutes.
As an alternative, I took mine in and had the second annual service done. And all I said to the guys was, can you update all the software to the latest version? And they did. And obviously they installed that software, but not as a specific let's fix a Tesla issue, but because it's in for a service, they updated all the software. Now it works fine.
That's interesting.
Somebody has been told don't update anything unless we specifically tell you to.
Okay, right.
So what is that? Sometimes people say, you know, do the updates, and unless there's a recall out by MG, then they won't update the, you know, a service action, should we say. They're not going to actually update the news as a matter of course. So that doesn't guarantee. So I'm just saying, I agree, Les, that I think it should be that the customer doesn't pay. However, at the moment, that's MG's stance on it.
Miles, is that I could definitely see, as Vince has said, if I go and take the car in for a service, I'd expect, like I do with any other car in the past, when you get a service, you get everything they've done because you're paying for a service. If I just rock up and say, stick this in, I can see the reason why they can say, no, you're not paying. We're not going to do it for free, which I can understand. I can understand that. But if I'm paying, when I bought my 5, I said, can I get a service plan for the next X number of years, as I've done in many other cars? And at the time, the dealer couldn't even offer that because that wasn't on their chart.
2 years ago. Such.
2 years ago. Oh. 2 years ago.
Strange,
I couldn't take out a service plan. I'm not on a facelift. So mine's pre-facelift.
Yeah. Well, mine's a facelift and I got a service plan, no problem at all. And from Charlie. We need to clear this up because it,
yeah, and I think if you compare this to, you look at the how people expect with other cars like Teslas, you know, they're expecting over the air updates. You know, it gets done. You know, and this is where I'm wondering where we're going to be with the Cybster and the future.
Yeah. I mean, it does sound a difficult situation. I mean, Archie McKellar on the chat is saying that he's been quoted £800, but apparently that also includes a CCU replacement to get the update.
I've seen that. Yeah. There's a couple reporting £400, £500, £600, £800 that they've been quoted by dealers who have this update installed. There's also confusion over which cars are available. And I think if I remember rightly, Miles, did we not say that both the pre-facelift long-range car could be updated and the facelifted car could be updated, but not the standard range? Is that correct?
That's as far as I'm aware. Yeah, I mean, I haven't tried all these cars on Tesla chargers. I don't know, but I know that the Tesla Charger update was done to James's car, I think, and his is a pre-facelift long range.
Yeah.
That works. Okay. So,
yeah.
All right. Okay. Let's move it on. So let's talk about the MG ZS. Vince, you're still driving one. Yeah. Which version have you got?
I've got this black one, the long range here. Had that 2 years now.
Excellent.
Works fine. I love it. It's working great.
And have you had any issues or recently or anything coming up?
The very first CCS charge I did on my first trip to North Wales, it failed completely at the vehicle control system fault and the HP battery shaft. I had to get it flatbed back to the garage. But a day after it had been in the garage, MG UK issued a software update, and it's been perfect ever since.
Was yours one of the early ones?
Oh, it's March 22, and I think that's really one of the very first releases. Yeah, but since then, it's not been in for anything. I've got a broken coil spring at the back, which is on order at the minute. The car still drives.
Okay.
Yeah,
it does seem. I've been looking at the ZS forums. There's an in praise of the ZS thread at the moment, which has a lot of happy customers on there. Reporting how happy they are. Now, there are very few new issues. I think I've seen one or two with a coil spring problem. And there's a long-running battery state of health thread that's been there since 2021 that Modolf has updated. So typically people seem to be seeing a 90% state of health after 4 or 5 years and about 50,000 miles, at least on the Gen 1.
On the Gen 1 there, I could check the state of health with using Torque Pro or Torque Light. On this, I can't connect to it with the Torque Light at all. They seem to have changed the protocols, so you can't talk. Yeah. I can't find a protocol that I can talk to, so I can't check the state of health.
Fair enough. It does seem to be well above the kind of 70% guarantees, and looking good for the long term there.
Yeah, well, like I said, it's guaranteed for 70.
Yes. So, anything else that anyone wants to add on the ZS? Any other talking points? Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll move on then to the 4. So, a few things to say here. I mean, not much of this is new. I think I've talked at length, and I won't go into it again, about my AC charging issue I had. In the end, it was all resolved. The new CCU and software patches fixed that. I needed both for it to work properly. And it took a bit of time to get that sorted and to understand, to get it set up properly. But it's all working perfectly well and has been since. And so now I can happily home charge again. Now, that problem is only for phase one model year 2022 long range cars, as far as we can tell. Nobody seems to be reporting it in any other version. So if you've got a more recent 4 than that, or if you've got the standard range, you shouldn't come across this. We've also had some DC charging issues, but it's gone quiet on that again, so I don't know how many people are getting this. This is the P1EB2 battery interface control module, not programmed fault. It does seem to be pretty rare, but I've noticed one or two people, again, having their CCU replaced. And I think we've said before, CCU problems are kind of across all makes, all manufacturers. There's lots of common suppliers. There's been various problems that different makes have had. Over time, getting them with bad batteries or getting them replaced. And the supply, Miles, is that the supply seems to have come in and be holding up. I had to wait for the batteries to come in, the replacement CCUs. But
this is the charger control units, is it, Tom?
Yes, that's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Do you know any more, Miles, about that? Any more updates on this problem?
No, I don't have any further updates apart from the fact that they've got a supply of, they got a big batch in of about 90 units in February. And since then, kept replenishing as they've dropped down, they've got another one batch coming through. So it does seem to be I say like a certain VIN range that's affected rather than it's not all MG4s. They seem to be fixing that. Incidentally, I mentioned at the start, I'm driving a Hyundai Ioniq 5 now, and there's been loads. In fact, they've now done a recall. For all Ioniq 5s have the ICCU replaced, so the integrated charge control unit, because that was basically stopping the car from being able to charge, which I imagine is an issue, as you know, Tom. So, apparently that's an issue with Hyundai as well. To give you an idea, the Hyundai that I'm driving at the moment was £48,000 new. So,
It's often the same suppliers. Yeah, it's the same components, same suppliers offer, even if you're paying $25,000 or $45,000, isn't it? So
it's not unique to MG.
Okay. No. On the X-Power, there's still the vibration thread rumbling on. there's rumours of a new fix coming from MG. I don't know if you've had any...
I've got no information about that at the moment.
Okay, it could just be speculation. Lots of people, again, trying to change the tyres. A lot of people saying that it was just
with the early cars and not with the later
I don't know. There seem to be new reports still coming in with people getting... Whether they're it's the car's new to them, but it's been in stock, or it's an older car it's hard to say. It's certainly not everybody. It's selective.
I think as well, it's when some people call it a vibration, but some people it's more of a hum inside the car rather than actual. It's not like shaking it as such. It's more of an audible thing. So, again, this is part of the problem as to, you know, when someone's describing a fault to a technician or whatever, is it, you know, is it a ding? Is it a ting? Is it a, you know, what's the actual noise that you're hearing? And people's perception can be different. So, rather than being a vibration that comes through the steering wheel, I believe it's more of a, like a sonorous sort of, it might be something, it might end up being that it's like the certain frequency response of a component.
It could be a resonance.
Resonance. Yeah.
Well, we'll wait and see. But it's still open.
I haven't got that at the moment, sorry.
Yeah, we'll wait and see. It looks like there is a new software update finally for trophy cars, the release 58, I think it is. But it doesn't seem generally available. People are still getting release 40 or release 46. So this is only if you have a... actually, it'll be a long range or a trophy, I imagine. Actually, no, it would be trophy spec. The SE spec is release 33, I think, which is the latest at the moment, which seems very stable for people. But do you know, have you heard anything, Miles, on new software releases?
Or what nothing. There's been nothing official. What they tend to say with the software there is, again, if it ain't broke, don't change it. So a lot of them will be launched on R40 or R46 just because if they physically power up the car and the nav unit all works, they're not going to touch it. They're not going to put an update on because it takes about an hour and a half to update the infotainment system of the car, which is a bit of a pain when you're trying to do a PDI. And secondly, sod's law, did something go wrong during that update and they cause themselves more issues. So if it's working, they just sort of leave it a handover, unless they get told by MG that they need to do differently.
Okay, that makes sense. The final thing for me is the battery state of health. So we've had various reports. We've been talking about it with the 5 and the ZS. So with the standard range LFP battery, people are typically getting a reading of 95%, which I think is expected because you have an initial drop and then the standard, the LFP battery is expected to be very stable and decay very slowly after that. And then for those on the long range battery, the NMC chemistry, we're getting 99 or 100%. But there you've got the buffer, which could be masking what's going on there. But it's still, you know, 12 months, 18 months in with a decent mileage, people are not really seeing much degradation at all, which is great. And seems to be the story across all of these electric vehicles. How's yours performing, Les?
Yeah, they're all fine. All fine.
Have you got the LFP? I think you have, haven't you?
Yeah, the LFP battery in the Welsh car. Yeah, it's the standard range one, and it's fine. Hmm. Yeah, it's affected badly in the winter, like any other electric vehicle. It really is affected badly in the winter. But now, well, it's still not very warm yet, but it seems to be doing far better than what it was doing a few weeks ago.
Yes. So
it's pretty good.
That's a good point, actually. There's been some threads about how the LFP seems to be harder to heat up than the NMC. So in the battery heating, the intelligent heating
system. Intelligent heating system. I've still not fathomed how that works yet, quite honest with you. Yeah. Sometimes they get in it and it's on. Other times they get in and it's not on. I'm not fathomed how that thing works yet properly. But I don't drive it very often. That's my wife's car, so I don't worry. She's got to the stage now, she just gets in it and drives it, comes on, said it wants charging, and that's the end of that.
Well, fair enough. anyone have any insights to why LFP is difficult in cold? No, we don't have any.
I believe that the chemistry is more susceptible. It's less tolerant of cold temperatures, and therefore it does seem to lose energy easier in colder weather, and so your range can suffer unless the battery is warmed up. So the LFP would benefit from, and this is of course all different brands of cars, not just MG. LFPs do prefer being in a more or warmer climate. If you've got a garage, keep it in the garage. If you've not, then perhaps the intelligent battery heating would be a useful thing to use. Mm-hmm. But like you say, Les, if you're only going to do 10-15 miles a day in it, just charge it as and when, and just
just charge it when it needs it. I've had that philosophy all along. If it needs charging, charge it. If it doesn't, leave it alone. Always had that philosophy. Even with the five, I do that.
As long as it's enough range for what you're doing, it doesn't really matter if it's less than it was in the summer. For a lot of people, but what is the average journey? 6 miles or 7-9 miles? It's less than
average
10
daily
miles.
Journey is 18 miles. Daily.
18 miles, okay.
Day.
Okay.
So individual journeys, I think, about six. So
yeah. So for a lot of people, that's not a problem anyway. Anyway, Craggy, it's up the time. So I think we should probably wrap this one up. We've had a good session. Remember, guys, you can find the audio version of this podcast on all good podcast providers near you. Just search for MGEV's Community Podcast. That's it for us tonight. Many thanks to the volunteer moderators. Let's not forget them because they keep the forums running smoothly. Thanks to Alb, A Real Human, Coulomb, and Rolf. And many thanks to Stuart and the podcasters who give up their evenings to share their wisdom with the community. And particular thanks to me for collating the hot topics. And my thanks to everyone here tonight. So thanks to you, Les. Thanks for joining in.
Cheers, Tom. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thanks to you, Leo.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me along tonight.
Thank you, Vince.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. It's great to see you all again. Cheers.
And thank you, Miles.
Well, thank you, and good to meet you, Leo.
Great. And so with that, don't forget, if you found the podcast useful, please click on the like button. And if you subscribe and hit the notification bell, you'll get notified next time we go live, which is particularly useful if we have to change the day at the last minute, which sometimes happens. So we'll be back soon. And please keep us updated on anything you wish to discuss. And we're very keen to welcome new MGEV owners outside of the UK to join us on the podcast. So thanks, everybody, and take care and have a jolly good evening. Bye-bye.